Welcome to the special edition of Full Prefrontal, the Big Picture series. Coupled with our extensive library of conversations with leaders in the fields of neuroscience and cognitive, educational, and social psychology, in this special series, Sucheda plans to dive deeper into the science of executive function, including managing oneself and one's cognitive resources in order to achieve goals. Throughout the Big Picture series, we'll explore the difference between knowing and doing. She will share real-life examples and day-to-day tips for practicing intentional strategies to help you, your family, your team members, or your students build competencies in executive function to lead to stronger, more resilient relationships, sustainable communities, and fulfilling lives together. And now here is our host, Sucheda Kamath. All right, welcome back to Full Prefrontal, where we are exposing the mysteries of executive function. This is our third episode in the Big Picture series. Today, we're going to talk about raising resilient children. I'm looking forward to it. We're joined, as always, by our host, Sucheda Kamath. Good morning, Sucheda. How are you?
I'm great, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to this conversation. We had an interview not too long ago with a gentleman that talked to us about resilient children. So I'm looking forward to your clarifications on a couple of these key points here. I mean, I'm really glad that you're devoting a few segments in this Big Picture series to parenting. And I have no doubt parents that are listening to this podcast will certainly appreciate that as well. I mean, every parent wants their child to do well, right? And I think they mean they want them to be independent, free thinkers, be able to survive on their own. But it's not easy to help raise children who become independent, right? So I guess to really kick things off, we should start where we should always start, executive function, yeah?
Yes, and you sound like an expert now, Todd. You yourself have such a good understanding of this topic, and I'm going to reiterate the definition of executive function primarily so that we can tie it back to today's topic, which is resilience. You know, I've done so many talks and presentations, and always there's something very, very, the dominating thought on parents' mind is, how do I make my child independent, or how do children become independent? So I would say even maybe better goal is to, how do I make my children resilient? So just to get started with, executive function, you know, Lazak in 1982 defined it as one's capacity to engage in independent, purposeful, and goal-directed behaviors through passage of time. And what I love in this definition, what she covers is that independent, which is not needing intervention from the outside world, purposeful means having certain intentions to be fulfilled, and goal-directed, that means going towards the future. So it's that one's capacity to engage with these three things in mind through passage of time. So it also kind of captures this idea that there's a longevity in mind. So let's say if I turn Netflix on and watch a show, I am independent. That means nobody made me. It was very purposeful. And the question is this really goal directed? Well, the goal directed is really where we need to finesse it, because the goal is to entertain oneself, then yes, it was goal-directed. But the goal is to finish a proposal that I'm working on. Instead, I choose Netflix, then it is not goal-directed. And so goal-directed is through passage of time. So, you know, does this happen to you that, you know, we are watching Netflix and you finish one show and then for a second you pause and say, should I go on to the next show? And some sort of guilt kicks in, you know, because you know that Netflix probably is not the best choice, considering there's a pile of work that's waiting for your attention. So that's the first idea when we talk about executive function that we need to think about, that making goal-directed and purposeful actions through passage of time. So it's not just the duration of next 30 minutes, but it's next 3 days, and then a week, and then month, and then even a year or longer. And so to be purposeful like that means saying no to a lot of things. So another way to think about executive function is that it's the one who survives roadblocks, challenges, setbacks, and disappointments, is the one who has mastery of executive function. But then this is also a definition of a resiliency. So a resilient student or child is the one who is goal-directed, that means moving towards a goal, but runs into a roadblock and still circumvents it. So the final thought about this executive function and resiliency connection is every parent's job or desire is to help someone get themselves to the final destination. So, you know, many, many researchers in the field define executive function as a self-directed. That means a great analogy comes to mind is that if there's a car that's stuck in a ditch and you're trying to recruit help from people to get the car out of the ditch versus the car is stuck in the ditch and you get your own help to get the car out of the ditch. So executive function is that self-directed, you doing things for you for a better future for yourself. So there's that guiding component where the advice to self comes from self. So what are parents looking for is how do children give themselves the best advice so that they can achieve the goals they have set for themselves.
So what does it say about me when a near 50-year-old still can't resist Netflix? And you know, I have my work. I have, as you know, my responsibilities towards my mother and father's estate. And so I mean, I have two full-time jobs, and yet I still get sucked into the Netflix vortex, you know, and I do feel guilty. I felt guilty when you were talking about it a minute or two ago. I mean, does it mean that I have weak executive function? Is that what that's telling me? And that's still something I could strengthen. No, I'll be honest with you. When I put Netflix aside and I get to work, I do feel good about that. So, I mean, is that telling me that I have some strengthening to do in my own executive function?
No, I love it. I think you're bringing up a very real question. So I want you to kind of think a little bit differently about executive function. So it's imagine like once you go to law school and you graduate, what are you known as? A lawyer, right?
Yeah.
And so you don't become less of a lawyer or your degree never goes away, even if you don't practice law. So that's one way of thinking. But executive function is not like going to law school and getting a law degree. It's more like having a function that's put to test every day. So you are going to fluctuate in these functions. So you are going to have good executive function skills, bad executive function skills, and depleting executive function skills or stellar executive function skills, depending on the context, day of the time of the day, or even the level of stress you have. So yes, it is possible. And you know, like all the research shows that online shopping even or the Netflix binge watching happens late at night. And if you think about why, that's because that ability to stay purposeful, goal-directed, and independent declines through passage of time. So I am a much better version of myself in the morning than I am that version of myself disappears. It's exhausted and it says, you know, screw it. I am not going to do this anymore. I'm going to watch. I'm going to entertain. I deserve this entertainment. So I don't think so much so that you have bad executive function, but I would say that you are not regulating yourself towards the later part of the day when you're exhausted, stressed, or just spent. So I think the most important thing to think about executive function is knowing what to do when things don't go per plan is where the stellar executive function skills can shine. Okay. That's when you can bring on these skills where you are putting your own ability to resist these temptations and stay goal-oriented comes into play. In other words, executive function skills are used for everyday problem solving. And those children who do the problem solving are considered independent and self-sufficient. And the biggest help parents can give is teach children to problem solve for themselves. And I see that a lot of times missing. So for example, if your son left his jacket in the car, and he is going to be in school and it's very cold. And when he goes to the playground, he's going to be cold. And so I see a lot of parents running to school and dropping off the jacket. Or, you know, your teenager, a high schooler printed the copy of the paper, but it's in the printer, never picked it up. So parents are running to school. So one of the things I would like people to think about, if you want your children to really rise to the occasion, is when they face a problem, they need to know what they should do. Now, I always say to parents that, of course, take the jacket, take the paper, but let your child call you. If your child is not aware and if the child is not vested and the child is not concerned for his own future progress, then you taking the steps, you're just trying to prevent his future failures. So there is a really important, the actionable part to executive function is it has to be advice given to self by self. And that advice should be followed. So the last thing I'll say about this is the self-driven component of executive function. So the challenging part about the self-driven element of executive process is it's self-directed. That means I am the driving force behind me. I am guiding me. I'm telling me what to do, what not to do. And so that advice needs to come from the child to the child. And the child should be the one who follows his own advice. So if you have a child who comes home and he has homework, but he takes the iPad and now he's playing games on the iPad, a parent steps in and says, hey, Johnny, stop playing with the iPad, get started with homework. Then you were driving that child. And so that is not executive function. So if you have a child who is cooperative, very respectful, and engaged in your parenting, who may actually follow your advice and do as said. But then what if you have a child who has difficulty with that and, you know, who pushes back and doesn't do what you ask? And then that's when the child is not independent because he needs to be told. But even when he's told, he may or may not do what he's being told. So he's not cooperative, he's not engaged, and he's not thinking about his own self in the future terms. So just a quick caveat about self-driven is the children's brain are learning these goals and missions for themselves, so they are not fully aware what those are. And so interim, they need to follow someone's advice and directives. However, if you have a seventh grader and you are telling the child to, hey, eat your breakfast now. Hey, get into the car now. Hey, don't forget your poster. Hey, don't forget your lunchbox. And then that's a lot of giving directives. And that means the child is not independent and you certainly need to be concerned.
All right. Well, that makes sense to me. I'm beginning to get a picture of how parenting can really impact this in a positive way. How does resiliency fit into this?
Well, that's a great question. So now that we know executive function is self-directed and really solving problems that self faces, then resiliency fits beautifully because resilience by definition means it's one's ability to bounce back from difficult experiences. In the literature, when they started defining this, and we have had several guests on our show who talked about this before, you know, Robert Brooks, we have Sam Goldstein talk about this. So resiliency is a process of adapting in the face of adversity. And in extreme cases, the adversity is trauma, tragedy, loss, those kinds of adverse situations. But if you look at resiliency, it's simply kind of interacting with difficult experiences and conflicts, such as you can have difficult relationships. You know, there can be serious illness, chronic health crisis. All those are stressors that create a problem. But executive dysfunction itself is the largest stressor for a child who doesn't have all these traumatic or adverse conditions, but their inconsistency, lack of motivation, not able to pursue goals. All those things can create a lot of challenges. And then bouncing back is what we are looking for. So take an example of a pencil tip. If a pencil tip breaks, what should a child do? You know, is the simple question. And I can't tell you the number of times teachers tell me that a third grader will go to a teacher and say, my pencil broke. And the teacher will just look at him and say, and? He says, what do you want me to do? And she said, and? And he says, I don't know, sharpen it. Where's the sharpener? Well, look around. And then the child says, I can't find it. So this kind of running into a roadblock and not having a solution is where the resiliency needs to be kind of polished. So a child who's not solving problems for self is considered not resilient. So for example, if it's raining and you can't play outside, then this is a child who's going to have a lot of annoying complaints that, oh, I want to go out, I want to go out, I want to go out. But the parents are saying, well, I can't help it. It's raining, it's raining, it's raining. And so resiliency is to say, oh, it's raining, let me play with Legos today. Similarly, a last situation, I'll give an example that if you are at Chuck E. Cheese, for example, and you are at a birthday party and your friends win these hundreds of tickets and you win nothing, that requires resiliency. That means you have to bounce back and say, it's okay if I don't win anything. But if you start whining or if you start grabbing tickets from other kids or if you throw a massive temper tantrum, that's where a lack of resiliency can take you. It can create a lot of behavioral problems. It can create a lot of psychosocial emotional adjustment problems. And that's why it's really important to tie executive function and resiliency together.
Makes a lot of sense. And the Chuck E. Cheese example was a painful memory because I was one of those kids often that didn't win any darn tickets. And it took me into adulthood before I figured out how to appropriately handle those kinds of scenarios. Fascinating stuff. So, I mean, I get it. When a child doesn't do what he or she is asked, or doesn't know what to do, is obviously very frustrating. I mean, what part of this, I mean, what element of this is hard for parents to understand?
Well, I think that, you know, parenting should really focus on helping kids become good at adapting to unexpected circumstances, really get good at dealing with changes. And the best job the parent can do is to prepare kids to help themselves rethink in the most crisis situation or pause and take an inventory of what are my alternatives. And for parents themselves, they need to develop patience and tolerance as the child is not successful. Or like, imagine if your child is the only one who didn't get any tickets and you have seven kids and they all have tickets. A parent is going to go and buy tickets at cost,
right,
and actually give those tickets. So because it's very painful to see your child in pain. And so I'm not objecting to parents' desire to do it, but parents have to resist the temptation. Because there's a lesson to be learned. When you don't have those tickets, it's not end of the world, but it's really, really important that things don't work out in the most fair and rational way. And do you have any ways? So the first thing I will say to the child is, I am so sorry you don't have any tickets. So I think this is where the parents can really change their ways, is first come from a place of empathy, great respect for the child. Child's suffering, which may be temporary, right, and suffering may be a radical word. And the second part is that parents have to really put the ball back into the child's court and say, what do you think you can do? Oh my goodness, this must be really bad. And the last thing I'll say about what parents don't get it or may be struggling with is learning these skills. There's no class or you don't go to like executive function school to get all these skills trained. It's mostly learned by osmosis. So learning typically happens as part of educational, personal development, schooling, growing up in a household, and general engagement in life, like such as getting invited to Chuck E. Cheese or getting invited to, you know, the paintball thing or whatever you call it. And that osmosis, like simply by being in those conditions, you get a chance to adapt. One of the gifts that parents can give a child is to expose the child to multiple opportunities or vivid situations where they can adapt. And that can be a good start.
Well, I would love for you to give us some tips on how to deal with this. Quick comment, though. I mean, correct me if I have misread what I see in a lot of literature and a lot of discussion. I mean, I feel like when I was a kid, like in the summer, I would go outside after breakfast and I wouldn't come home till dinner. My mom and dad trusted me to survive out in the world. I just don't see that happening today. The parents, I don't want to blame parents. This almost feels more of a cultural phenomenon than it is bad parenting, or maybe it's lack of awareness type of parenting. But parents just seem to be way too hands-on now. I mean, and maybe that's some of the tips you're going to share with us is how not to be that way.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head that your experience, childhood experience, my childhood experience, there was one thing that stood out and probably is distinct from the children growing up is that we were given opportunities to explore our world on our own, and we had greater sense of personal control. You know, we had this conversation about resiliency in Robert Brooks' podcast. So when we are experiencing challenging situations or crisis, and that crisis may be simply getting excluded, that crisis may be that you are playing hide and seek and you can't find a friend that is hiding. Or it could be simply that, you know, your shirt got stuck and now it's ripped and your parents are going to be mad. So those kinds of experiences only happen when you're out in the field. And I think that children, and there's another fantastic book I read on parenting. It's called All Joy, No Fun. And in that book, I think the author is Jennifer History. She talks about this, that as urbanization happened, families are living in isolation and activities that children are engaging are not in the community, but parents have now come to a point where they have to drive their children. So majority of times, the parent and child are isolated from their community, and every child and parent are isolated from every other child and parent. And so you go to special activities, let's say you do fencing and you drive all the way 30 miles away to fencing class, your child does the fencing instructioning or whatever, and then you are watching or you go grocery shopping and the child gets back in the car and now again, it's you and your child. So what you had to get your hands dirty, you know, I had a chance to like a play for hours to explore and get rejected and then stand up for myself and then just have like my heart broken. All those opportunities are not there. So that's a big change in culturally, and maybe that's the 21st century challenge for all of us.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're just sitting inside all day playing video games, you're not having bad experiences. And there are bad experiences, and then there's life where you just have, you have unfortunate things happen. A kid hits you, you trip and you cut your knee and you bleed and you're far from home. And there's things happen in a child who's who's actually experiencing those things. I didn't never realized what I was learning when I was out there doing those kinds of things. And I just feel like that's not happening as much as it used to.
Yeah. And so here's my first tip, you know, parents out there, please infuse your children's lives with a sense of purpose. That's like infusing a strong sense of meaning and purpose, work on making positive difference in the life of others, you know, kind of volunteering, charitying, belonging to a larger organization, you know, if going to soup kitchen and maybe serving people or Meals on Wheels or working in your local church, but also giving your children an opportunity to see how others don't have as much as you do. This perspective is really critical to rein back your whining. So when you feel like things are so unfair and you have a perspective that things are a lot more unfair for many, many people, that's when you are going to kind of question your privilege. And that resiliency is to say, oh my God, this is nothing. This is minor. That comes from a perspective. So we must allow that perspective to kick in. You know, one of the things that I can say, that strong sense of meaning comes from having something that anchors the child into family values. You know, like when I was raising my children, one of the things that we talked about is our cultural identity as a family, that it's an Indian family that has been born and raised in India. So the parents coming from India have that lens. So we had a very much cultural element to our daily household. And that kind of gave the sense of meaning. We had, you know, morning certain things that you do with your family. We had dinner even when my kids went to college, one of the things that they said that they were so surprised that many of their college peers had never had dinner together with their parents in the entire high school, or that was not a common thing. So we, even however worse times in terms of time management, we always made that as a priority. And also kind of explicitly, that sense of purpose then gives you some direction to handle mistakes. And then that kind of lays the foundation for effective coping strategies.
This idea, though, of helping children handle mistakes better, because you and I mean, every human being I know has a struggle with that. And it's so prevalent in the workplace where we don't take bold action. We're afraid to be innovative. We're afraid to be creative because we don't want to be rejected or be making mistakes. We have this instinct that it's going to be the response is going to be punitive. If we could figure out how to solve that problem and teach people that, you know, how to handle mistakes and look at them as learning opportunities, it would change the world. How do you do that in an effective way with a child?
I love your question. I think you just, such wonderful observations you're bringing into this conversation. Handling mistake to me is such a fundamental way of allowing young people to come into themselves. And this is my second tip, that it's the parent mentoring. So there's parenting and then there's mentoring. And a point comes into a child's life when you need to stop being a parent and you need to become a mentor, a pentor, I call it. And so one thing that I think that's very critical, what does a mentor do? And the mentor is the one who is anchored in thoughts of being there for you. So there's a enormous emotional validation that's built into your relationship with that person, that you are okay. Making a mistake is okay. And I think that where parents tend to catastrophize primarily, I mean, and I get it, like, why would you worry about a child making mistake? Is when you see a mistake, the parent is saying, oh my God, you're in third grade and you don't bring your homework home. That means how are you going to go to college? So if you look at one mistake and catastrophize in your heart that is this emblematic of many, many, many behaviors, if they're not rectified, become a disaster. Then if you come from that place, then you stop being a mentor. You become a nag. You become a worrywart. You become this person who is extremely anxious, and anxious people cannot mentor, right? So you have to, as parent, when the parent mentors dealing with mistakes, there's a concept called self-distancing. That means, how do I separate me from this situation of crisis and take a perspective from far away? And so that taking a perspective on self from somebody else's point of view is another wonderful trick that parents can practice. So, you know, what I would say that this is really, really, you know, Mary, this is so concerning that I see that you have a zero, two zeros on your homework. I'm really concerned. So tell me, what do you think, you know, if this was a girl in New York City and she goes to a private school, what would she do if this was her problem? So self-distancing is kind of making it somebody else's story and providing solution to that person whose story it is. And we are great advice givers, right? Mm-hmm. So, and the last thing to become a parent mentor and, you know, in with respect to dealing with mistakes is hold back the urge to rush into rescuing the child. This is such an important tip.
I've long struggled with how as a parent to do this. And I love this notion of shifting your mindset into one as a mentor. It's a whole different mental place to be when you're trying to teach. So I that's game changing for me in terms of how I think about this and how I can counsel others. Great stuff.
Yeah. And so this brings me to the third tip, which is manage information. No multitasking should be allowed. So really, I think I cannot tell you all the research is pointing out to not only that multitasking is a myth, but it can cause destruction to your capacity to dive deep. And I don't think households these days are designed or have created the ambiance or environment where the child can dive deep. The parents themselves are not diving deep into content. That silent, quiet work where no TV is on, no cell phones are next to you, no having iPads, no having music playing, that kind of thing is considered almost like a loserville. Mm-hmm. People feel that, how can I stay connected if I don't have my phone? Well, I'm going to keep it right next to me and it's on silent, but I am seeing if somebody called, if there's no ping, but I'm seeing the image of some movement of the screen. And so that information management roadblocks is that we are really, really not good role models. So the parents need to really up their game and become extremely vigilant about what kind of messaging they have around technology and multitasking. You know, I have seen so many parents listening to their kids while they're texting, or they are on the computer, their eyes are on the computer, and they encourage the kid to say, continue, keep going, I'm listening. I don't think it's possible. And there's something called joint attention. I love this idea of joint attention. Joint attention is my eye gaze goes to that thing where your eye gaze goes to. And then we jointly pay attention to that thing. And parents have a very influential role to play in early developing years through joint attention. But eventually this attention becomes a interactive attention. So I feel like where I am attending to your eyes and you're attending to my eyes. So I know what you're feeling, what you're thinking, and what you're going to say, because I am appraising, I'm evaluating, I'm assessing your facial expressions and your body language. I am missing out on all that if my technology is capturing my attention. And that this listening is really a myth. You cannot listen if you're multitasking. And a last thing I'll say about multitasking is paying attention to multiple goals simultaneously. So it could be that your mind is occupied with something else and you are multitasking because you're solving a problem that's in your head while you're actually listening to your child and you're not solving that problem. So a lot of parents are preoccupied. They come home, they have not finished their business. They have so many things on their mind and they are not doing the best job of managing their stressors and their own resiliency may be put to test. But that is what we need to do if we want our children to become great problem solvers.
Well, I'm not saying anything profound when I say that our modern society, our modern culture makes this idea, almost encourages multitasking. And it took me in deep into my 40s before I realized that I need to strip down and focus on one thing in front of me. And what I learned is that I do it better when I focus on one thing and I enjoy it more. So it took me a long time to figure that out. I wish I had learned that skill sooner.
Yeah. Another, you know, this is my last suggestion before I summarize all the tips, but a weekly family meeting. It's really critical that parents have a separate time set out to discuss affairs of the family. And when I say that, I don't really know if people do this often, but it's a discussion of what is our mission as a family? How are we doing with our strengths and weaknesses? How are we doing with our glitches or roadblocks we have experienced as a family. When Mary has three zeros or two zeros on her homework, it is a family business. It's not fixing Mary or making sure Mary doesn't get any zeros. That's not the issue. The issue is what is in your environment, what is in our lifestyle that is impacting your ability to achieve your goals, and how can we help? So this sense of community needs to be very, very strong if we want resiliency in our children. And that's where parents, it's a great idea if parents create a weekly agenda, if they not handle crisis or problems in the problematic situations. Let's say if your child broke curfew, you have a teenager and who comes home late and you start, you know, riding him at 12:30 in the garage, that's not going to yield you anything. But you bring this up in a very calm environment on Wednesday when you have a family meeting and say, hey, Ethan, we were really disappointed that you didn't come home before the curfew ended. And, you know, we have a curfew for a reason. Do you know those reasons? So kind of bringing, really putting the problem back on the child's, in child's lap, so that he can actually identify the causes of the problem, consequences of the problem. And I like to discuss the third part, which is the unseen consequences. So the unseen consequence of every problem is the way it impacts social interpersonal relationship. So it's not just being late is a problem because you are going to be late for your class tomorrow, but it also was a sign of disrespect to your parents' wishes. And that can impact a social emotional relationship. And that's where we need to really, really focus on. And in closing, Todd, here's what I would say to parents, that respect and support effects of emerging executive function skills. Know that a child who is 9 years old is less proficient than a child who is 16. So allow the emergence of executive function skills. The tools and methods that you implement in the house or discuss are important, but they need to be modeled and used under supervision. The third thing I will say, let go the small stuff, you know, minor glitches, forgive them. Don't make a federal case with every little problem that your child is running into. Be very purposeful and intentional when you engage with that child in guiding and helping him become resilient. It is very critical to have planned and organized household, and household that really respects time, each other's time and the time of the society, so to speak. And kind of that needs to be on the forefront. And the last thing is problem solve. So problem solve together, bring forward your personal problem solving process, make it transparent, discuss it, be extremely encouraging to the child that problems are universal, mistakes are universal. Making mistakes is least of anyone's problem. It's just not discussing the mistakes or not revisiting is a bigger problem.
Yeah, boy, lots to think about with regards to problem solving. That's a skill that so many people in the workplace struggle with because they either don't know how to solve problems or they don't feel empowered to solve problems. And that's why their careers languish oftentimes. Lots to think about there as well. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. On behalf of our host, Sucheta Kamath, and all of us at Cerebral Matters, thank you for listening to our Big Picture series. And we look forward to seeing you again right here next week on Full Prefrontal.
Thank you for listening to Full Prefrontal, exposing the mysteries of executive functions. To contact our host, Sucheta Kamath, and learn more about her work on improving executive functions, visit her website at CerebralMatters.com. That's CerebralMatters.com. Tune in next week for the next informative episode of Full Prefrontal.